I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! Please support our independent journalism at democracynow.org. That's democracynow.org. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar. Thank you so much. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I think Israel has come out this time clear that it is after every one of us, not only in Palestine, but worldwide. It is after the truth. It wants to commit its atrocities in the darkness. And today, everybody, like this demonstration, is saying, you commit your war crimes and crimes against humanity, but not in darkness. We shall reveal it. We shall follow and pursue every war criminal, and everyone should be served with justice.
Israel continues to attack refugee camps and other areas across the Gaza Strip, as health officials say the assault has killed more than 21,500 Palestinians over the past 12 weeks. UNRWA says the besieged territory is facing catastrophic hunger. We'll speak with Hassan Zumlo, Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom. As Israel admits extensive collateral damage, a new United Nations report condemns the rapid deterioration of human rights in the West Bank, where it says at least 300 Palestinians have been killed since October 7th by Israeli soldiers and settlers.
The dehumanization of Palestinians that characterizes many of the settlers' actions is very disturbing and must cease immediately.
We'll speak with Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territory. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Another 187 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza over the past 24 hours as Israel continues to attack refugee camps and other areas across the Gaza Strip. Gaza health officials say the Israeli assault has killed more than 21,500 Palestinians over the past 12 weeks. In central Gaza, Israeli attacks killed at least 35 Palestinians in the Nusayrat and Maghazi refugee camps. At least 20 more Palestinians died when Israel attacked a residential building near the Kuwaiti hospital in the southern Gaza city of Rafah, which is overflowing with displaced Palestinians. One 13-year-old Palestinian girl named Nadine Abdelatif said Israel bombed the shelter where she and her family were staying after their home in Gaza City was blown up and one of her brothers killed.
Where am I supposed to go? Children were killed here. 26 people were killed here. I'm terrified. I'm scared, and the thought of me being killed or my other brother being killed just crossing my mind repeatedly. I already lost my older brother. I can't lose my younger brother. I have no one left. No one to look up to. You can clearly see that the houses are sticked together. So when they target one house, they're targeting a whole block by this point. And it's unfair. Why can't we live normally? Why can't we live a normal life? I mean, we're children and we're people. Children were killed here. Imagine, children, babies.
In more news from Gaza, Israeli military officials have admitted it carried out a deadly strike on the Maghazi refugee camp on Christmas Eve that killed at least 70 Palestinians. The IDF says it, quote, regrets the harm caused to civilians and claimed Israeli troops had used the wrong type of bomb. An Israeli official said, quote, the type of munition did not match the nature of the attack, causing extensive collateral damage, which could have been avoided, unquote. Despite the admission, Israel continues to attack the Maghazi refugee camp. On Thursday, at least five people were killed when Israel bombed a UN-run girls' school at the camp, which was housing displaced Palestinians. According to UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, at least 308 people at UN shelters in Gaza have been killed so far. Another 1,100 have been injured. The United Nations is also warning about increasing Israeli military and settler attacks in the occupied West Bank. According to the UN, at least 300 Palestinians, including 79 children, have been killed in the West Bank since October 7th. On Thursday, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, decried settler violence targeting Palestinians.
The dehumanization of Palestinians that characterizes many of the settlers' actions is very disturbing and must cease immediately. I call on Israel to take immediate, clear, and effective steps to put an end to settler violence against the Palestinian population, to investigate all incidents of violence by settlers and Israeli security forces.
In Tel Aviv, hundreds of people took part in Israel's largest peace rally since Israel began attacking Gaza after the October 7th Hamas attack. Protesters called for an immediate ceasefire and the release of hostages still held in Gaza. This is Alon Lee Green of the Jewish Arab Peace Coalition Standing Together.
We are here to say that the war and the way of wars has achieved nothing. The way of the right wing of Israel, of one war after the other, of only using military power to try and achieve some change in reality, have achieved only destruction and death and killing of innocent people. So we are here sounding a voice of a different path, a path of independence, of equality, of freedom for all, a path of Israeli-Palestinian peace. Agreement.
In other news from Israel, authorities have determined an Israeli woman who is thought to have been taken hostage on October 7th was actually killed during the Hamas attack. The 70-year-old Judith Weinstein Haggai was a mother of four and grandmother of seven. She held Canadian and U.S. citizenship. She lived in Kibbutz Nir Oz with her husband, Gadi Haggai, whose death was confirmed last week. He was a dual U.S.-Israeli national. Meanwhile, on Thursday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu canceled a scheduled war cabinet meeting to discuss Israel's plan for Gaza after the war ends over disagreements with Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, who opposes proposals for the Palestinian Authority to help run Gaza. Here in the United States, in Maine, the state has joined Colorado in barring Donald Trump from the Republican primary ballot over his role in the January 6th insurrection. On Thursday, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows issued a written decision saying the insurrection clause in the 14th Amendment makes the former president ineligible to run for public office again. In her ruling, Bellows wrote, quote, I am mindful that no secretary of state has ever deprived a presidential candidate of ballot access based on Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. I am also mindful, however, that no presidential candidate has ever before engaged in insurrection, unquote. Trump's campaign has vowed to appeal the ruling. A campaign spokesperson described Bellows' decision as, quote, partisan election interference efforts that were, quote, a hostile assault on American democracy, unquote. The U.S. Supreme Court will likely have the final say on Trump's ballot eligibility. Last week, Colorado's Supreme Court barred Trump from Colorado's primary ballot, but Michigan's Supreme Court has ruled he can stay on the Michigan ballot. At least 16 people have been killed in Ukraine after Russia launched a massive wave of missile and drone attacks targeting the capital, Kyiv, and other cities, including Lviv in the west, Odessa and Zaporizhia in the south, and Dnipro and Kharkiv in the east. The Ukrainian military said it has, quote, never seen so many locations targeted simultaneously, unquote. The attacks come days after Ukraine struck a Russian warship and occupied Crimea. Meanwhile, the New York Times is reporting that Russian President Vladimir Putin has been signaling for months through intermediaries that he's open to a ceasefire deal that would allow Russia to keep Ukrainian land it seized during the war. The U.S. Justice Department is threatening to sue the state of Texas if it begins enforcing a new law empowering police to arrest anyone they suspect of entering the United States without authorization. The law was signed last week by Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott. Meanwhile, CBS is reporting Border Patrol this month has taken into custody more than 225,000 migrants who attempted to cross the southern border outside of an official crossing. That's the highest monthly total in the agency's history. Earlier this week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador in Mexico City as the Biden administration looks to further limit the number of asylum seekers arriving at the southern border. And one of Argentina's most powerful labor unions has called for a national strike next month to protest the shock therapy economic policies of Argentina's new president, Javier Milei. The General Confederation of Labor called for the strike to take place on January 24th.
24.
On January 24th, we are going to hold a strike and will mobilize to Congress to support those Congress members who agree that this cannot happen in Argentina. Because if they give all of the public power to a president for 2 years and he can renew it for another 2 years, we'll be facing a situation where a president is going to have, during his entire mandate, the sum of public power and the institutions will not be respected and nothing will be respected.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Another 187 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza over the past 24 hours as Israel continues to attack refugee camps and other areas across the Gaza Strip. Gaza health officials say the Israeli assault has killed more than 21,500 Palestinians over the past 12 weeks. In central Gaza, Israeli attacks killed at least 35 Palestinians in the Sirat and Magasi refugee camps. At least 20 more Palestinians died when Israel attacked a residential building near the Kuwaiti hospital in Rafah, the southern Gaza city overflowing with displaced Palestinians. In more news from Gaza, Israeli military officials have admitted it carried out a deadly strike on the Maghazi refugee camp on Christmas Eve that killed at least 86 Palestinians. The IDF said it regrets the harm caused to civilians and claimed that Israeli troops had used the wrong type of bomb. An Israeli official said, quote, the type of munition did not match the nature of the attack, causing extensive collateral damage which could have been avoided. Unquote. Despite the admission, Israel continues to attack the Maghazi refugee camp. On Thursday, at least five people were killed when Israel bombed a girls' school housing displaced Palestinians. Meanwhile, UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, has renewed its call for a ceasefire in Gaza, saying the besieged territory is grappling with catastrophic hunger. For more, we go to London, where we're joined by Hassam Zumlot, the Palestinian ambassador to the United Kingdom. Ambassador, welcome to Democracy Now! If you can just respond to this latest news, Israel's admission that they said they were apologizing for causing unnecessary collateral damage, what this means, and overall, if you can talk about what's happening in Gaza, in fact, the place where you come from.
Hello, Amy. Well, killing 187 Palestinians, primarily children and women, in UN shelters, girls' school, is not collateral damage. More than 21,000, as you reported, mostly 70% of them are women and children. And by the way, we have 8,000 unaccounted for under the rubble, so the numbers are going to be much higher. Rescue teams are unable to reach, let alone rescue all these people under the rubble for days and weeks. What Israel is doing is the first ever on-air genocide. This is not just about how many they're killing, primarily families and civilians. It's also about turning Gaza completely lifeless, unlivable, And you have all reported the targeting of the very infrastructure of Gaza, be it hospitals, be it schools, universities, and weaponizing food and water, starving 2.3 million people and displacing almost 2 million, most of them in Rafah, while still bombarding the very area they claim to be safe, is a very classic design of genocide and ethnic cleansing. I think Israel has been engaged since its establishment in one theory, one ideology, one idea. It wants the land, all of the land, without the people. Remember the mantra that, you know, a land without a people, for a people without a land. And this explains much of the Israeli actions. Otherwise, nothing justifies what has been happening over the last 12 weeks. And here, the problem really, really is not Israel. Israel is committing crimes against humanity. Israel will have to be held accountable. Its generals, its politicians will have to be behind bars, and justice will have to be served. And we Palestinians must think about our right of self-defense. This is number one priority. And our priority now is a complete, comprehensive, permanent ceasefire, because we cannot even assess the situation unless the mass killings of Israel ends. We want to see a massive humanitarian assistance immediately to Gaza from all sides, airlifted, sea lifted, and what have you, because the level of catastrophe is unprecedented in recent human history. We have to prevent Israel's actual real plan of pushing people out of Gaza towards Sinai, the ethnic cleansing, and we must ensure that Israel does not take any part of Gaza as they have been claiming. But there, we must revisit all that happened, including the U.S. role, Amy. And here we very much regret. You know, the U.S. has been losing its credibility, its standing over years and decades. But this time is different. This time is absolutely different. For many, many experts are and lawyers are looking into the U.S.'s direct material participation, contribution to the genocide we're talking about. Yeah, but we leave that to the lawyers. But definitely the U.S. could have prevented these atrocities that have really shocked humanity all over, but it did not. As you know, it did use the veto power to stop the Security Council from taking its own responsibility of enforcing law and order. And the Biden administration will be remembered by this. We will not forget. The Biden administration is complicit. It has enabled Israel to do so. It has enabled Israel to drag the whole region into this instability. It has enabled Israel to drag the whole world. Look what is happening to the international order, the rules that we created together after the Second World War, the horrors of the Second World War, when we all said never again. The U.S. is there, going out of its way to shield Netanyahu and the Smotrich and the Ben-Gvir, the most fanatical supremacist government in the history of mankind, not only Israel. And then the U.S. is there to shield this government. And the U.S. knows that this is Netanyahu's war. This is Netanyahu's war of choice. Netanyahu is doing this only to save his political career. He's not doing this for Israel's security. He's not doing this for any prospects for his people. He's doing this because he knows the moment his guns, would stop, the moment the political guns will turn against him, and he might end up in court and in jail. And then the U.S. fails to be the grown-up in the room is a moment to taint the U.S. for a long, long time to come, to taint the Biden himself personally and his every member of his administration.
What exactly do you think President Biden should be doing right now?
To stop the carnage, first and foremost. A president of the United States of America, and given the Constitution, the making of the U.S., the Bill of Rights of the U.S., your history, a president sitting there seeing all these children, hearing the U.N. Secretary General saying Gaza has become graveyard of children, and I'm sure he sees all these footages, and allowing this, enabling this, spinning this, giving Israel the political, legal, material cover to do this. You know, every bomb Israel is dropping on our children is American made. These 2,000 pounds bombs that they have been dropping, and you've just quoted their spokespeople saying that, oops, these bombs kill many people, that when we intended, this bomb has more collateral damage. These are American bombs. So who's responsible here? So America would stop this now if they stop providing Israel with weapons, with bombs, with these lethal weapons that have ended up in the bare bodies of our children. So America is responsible, Amy. It is responsible. And it must stop sending weapons to Israel immediately. And it must stop vetoing our efforts at the Security Council to stop this carnage, this madness. And by the way, Amy, this madness is not going to stop only on the borders of Israel-Palestine. You are already seeing the region. And, you know, more than six arenas are engaged now. And Israel is bombarding Lebanon, Syria, Yemen is involved. And God knows what will happen next. But also, the effect of this on humanity, I mean, on liberal democracies. Look what is happening in the US. Look what is happening in the UK and everywhere. There are some politicians who are going out of their way to shield Israel and in the process undermining the very foundation of liberal democracies, like people's right to protest, to speak, to express, to boycott. In your country, in the US, you know, many states have used the power of the law, legislating, so people will have to, in a way, sign a contract if they are going to deal with the federal government or any public body, that they will never boycott anything to do with Israel, even the settlement. Here in the UK, they're using the power of the law to make sure that here people will not divest from the illegal settlements, the illegal colonial settlements, according to UK law, US law, and international law, of course. So this is a moment when everybody, that's why, by the way, Amy, you've seen the hundreds of thousands of people here behind me in London a couple of weeks ago, and you will see many of them. Because these millions of people here and worldwide have discovered that actually Israel is not just oppressing the Palestinians. Israel is oppressing every one of them. Israel is oppressing humanity. Israel is dragging the entire world into this immoral orbit of wars and oppression and suppression of an entire people. And in the process, the world is losing its own international system, i.e. the United Nations, the Security Council, all the rules we created after the Second World War. What is the international order? What is the essence of the international order? It is that war should not be the first option. That's number one rule. That's why we have Security Council, to prevent wars. Number two, should wars be an option? There are rules for these wars. The Geneva Conventions, one of which is don't target civilians, and you must protect civilians as an occupier. And number three, there is accountability should war crimes have been committed. The U.S. has completely destroyed, enabled Israel to destroy all these provisions and rules and premises of the international order. And, Amy, if you allow me, and this is for the Biden administration to think about very seriously, to think about the impact that Israel has normalized the mass murder of children, the mass murder of families and civilians, the mass destruction of hospitals, schools, universities. Normalizing such scenes is going to have severe, severe consequences on our humanity, on how the world will function. Not even about the U.S. role. I believe the U.S. has lost its role, not only in Israel-Palestine. The U.S. will not have standing in the South. The U.S. will not have standing in the East anymore. The U.S. has really made this all about Israel for reasons beyond our discussion. It's almost, for many people in the South and in the East, it feels it's a cultural war waged by the U.S. And Israel is the, you know, that alliance, unbreakable, trumps anything. It trumps our laws, it trumps our humanity, it trumps our security, it trumps our children, it trumps everything. It's a moment to pause.
Ambassador, I wanted to ask you about Britain, about the tens of thousands of people who have protested, about Prime Minister Rishi Sunak firing the hard right Home Secretary Suella Braverman, coming a month after she called Palestinian solidarity marches, quote, hate marches. This is what Prime Minister Sunak said.
We've seen now tens of thousands of people take to the streets following the massacre of Jewish people.
This is Suella Braverman.
The single largest loss of Jewish life since the Holocaust, chanting for the erasure of Israel from the map. To my mind, there's only one way to describe those marches. They are hate marches.
Hate marches, Suella Braverman said. And then she was out. The significance of this.
Very, very significant. The main message is that this country, the people of this country, the British people, will not allow for such divisive politicians and rhetoric and discourse. and the people have really delivered their verdict. I have participated in all these demos, and most of them I spoke there, and I've seen firsthand. I've seen every color, every background. I've seen the Christians and the Muslims and the Jewish brothers and sisters who have been with us for a long time. I've seen a moment of unity of the British people delivering their message that ceasefire now, not in our name, that we have to end this once and for all. And by the way, this is the power of the people. I must admit, Amy, the position of the UK government is very concerning, very regrettable so far until now, lagging behind. Yet the position of the people, the energy of the people is really inspiring. And I must say very hopeful, because if we go back to history, it's people who ended up illegalities and oppressions, including the apartheid regime of South Africa. It's London here that the anti-apartheid movement emanated from. It's the British people and the American people, the Europeans, the Africans, the Asians that came together in that global movement and suffocated the apartheid regime, sucked oxygen out of the apartheid regime. And then we saw the end of that regime, and we saw the release of Nelson Mandela. So the power of the people is important. And as much as we despise governments, Western governments' position, that will be remembered in history. They will be judged through history. As much as we really are appalled by that, we are so inspired, empowered, and certain about the power of their people in the UK, in the US, and everywhere. And I think this is different. Now it's a moment of confliction. I believe this is a movement in the making that will go all the way to ending Israel's illegality and occupation.
So let's talk about what they call the day after, the plan for afterwards. You have Netanyahu canceling the war cabinet meeting. And I was just reading an article in the Times of Israel that says, in 2019, Yitzhak Ilan, a former deputy head of the Shin Bet, that's the Israeli intelligence agency, who was running for Knesset with the centrist Blue and White Party, told a political gathering that Smotrich was a Jewish terrorist who planned to blow up cars on a major highway during the Gaza disengagement. Ilan claimed he had personally interrogated Smotrich. Smotrich denied any connection to any plan to destroy infrastructure or commit terror offenses. Dvir Kariv, who was a senior agent in the Shin Bet at the time, claimed earlier this month in an interview with Channel 12 News that Israeli authorities decided not to prosecute Smotrich and his alleged collaborators because Shin Bet did not want to expose their sources. Now, I bring this up because apparently the finance minister, the far-right settler Bezalel Smotrich, is the one who prevented the war cabinet meeting from going, or at least that Netanyahu caved to, afraid he'd lose his coalition, which could mean that he would no longer be prime minister, which could mean he could be going to jail for his own corruption cases. But if you can talk about the cancellation of this war cabinet meeting and what you want to see happen afterwards.
Well, the cancellation of the war meeting, whatever it is just another expression of how fanatical, how extreme, how supremacist, how dangerous these people are. Not only Smotrich. By the way, Smotrich has published a plan. You can read it. It's online. That he calls, already a few years ago, that he calls for the ethnic cleansing of the rest of Palestinians. He gives us three options. Either we stay as slaves in our own homeland, or we leave en masse, look what they are doing in Gaza, or we are killed by the army. And he published this. So this is a man who now handles Israel's finance. He pays for the settlements, he pays for the army, etc. But there is sitting a convicted terrorist in the Israeli cabinet, including Ben-Gvir, who is now handling the so-called national security minister of Israel. It's unbelievable. And you know, one of the declared aims of war for Netanyahu is to de-radicalize the Palestinian people. I mean, who needs to be de-radicalized here? Ben-Gvir, who was convicted by an Israeli judge, Israeli court, as a terrorist and as a racist. You know, this is a moment when we don't really waste our time. We should not discuss the day after. The day after is going to be up to the Palestinian people. We have our structures, we have our legitimacy, we have our umbrellas, and we will make sure that the day after would be in a united people-like and a united land. Gaza is a part of Palestine, and any day after will have to include Jerusalem, the West Bank, and Gaza in one unit. We will not accept Israel's dreams, daydreaming, that Gaza Gaza will be carved out, as they have been trying to do for many, many years now. Israel is a beloved part of our territory. And the thing that we need to discuss, Amy, is the day before. And everybody now is wanting us to discuss the day after. No, the day before. The day before the 7th of October, the occupation, the colonization, the racism, the supremacy, the murders all over the West Bank, the provocations in Jerusalem, the rounding and arresting of our children without trial, without charge, without access to their parents or lawyers. This is what